Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. Got a returning guest on the line, someone who we've gone to time and time again, specifically for cryptocurrency analysis. But he touches on stocks, he touches on precious metals, and he's been spot on time and time again on what to expect in terms of the breakouts, what to expect in Bitcoin, the stock market, and in gold and silver. He's not someone who's been extreme in any of these instances. In fact, a lot of people that like Bitcoin assume that the stock market is going to 5,000. And he's been someone that's been openly bullish and just focusing on what is the trend lines and what is the technical analysis saying. And that is Tone Vaze. He's got a very popular YouTube channel, Trading Bitcoin is the name of the show, but you can look him up on YouTube, Tone Vaze. Tone, thanks for coming on Crush the Street with me once again.
Hey, Kenneth. Awesome. Happy to be on the show again. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're traveling now. You're in Vegas and you're still trying to get out, and good for you. I know this has been a wild year, and it's obviously impacted the markets and the things that we talk about. And I think something that none of us could have predicted in 2019, you know, like to think about how crazy and different our world is going to be, despite, you know, what your opinions are. It's just, it's unpredictable, right?
Oh yeah. No, this year has been absolutely crazy. My life's been pretty much flipped upside down. I'm used to traveling, speaking in public, and the way the governments around the world reacted to a virus that has a 99.9% survival rate has been disastrous for the world economy. And I just could not sit at home anymore. These policies, look, if you get a government paycheck, this is the greatest thing that has ever happened, right? You get to sit at home, do nothing and get paid. But if you have a business, you've been destroyed. Also, you know, if you have a family, you get to spend more time with your kids, that could be great. But for the young single people, this has been disastrous. And the young single people is the future of the world. And you just destroyed their future with what happened. And that, of course, affected the markets. And it's still affecting the markets that we should talk about. So go for it.
Yeah, totally agreed. And you know, there's a certain amount of just division that we've seen with the media censorship and the way people now view each other. If you don't take this seriously, if you're traveling, my goodness, you are putting people's lives at risk. And it the way that this has been injected into our lives has been the most divisive thing I've ever seen.
I'm taking the screw them, you know, like there's a lot of my old friends that I had friends before 2019. I have no interest of speaking to them ever again. You know, people need to live their life. So I have no problem. And I said one of my most popular tweets this year was, I may not have time for a lot of my pre-2020 friends this year because I'm out meeting new ones. People that, you know, didn't go crazy over this stuff. But it's just bad. It's just bad. And the politics as well, the whole election, I can just jump in on that real quick. I've always been, I don't know if we've talked about inflation and the US dollar going into hyperinflation. Prior to 2020, I used to make fun of the hyperinflationists. Look, the US dollar was always the most, the currency that was most demanded in the world. Like no amount of money printing was ever gonna send the dollar into hyperinflation. Hyperinflation has always been a political event. And we just had our political event. The only thing that matters to a currency is the confidence, not only of its people that are forced to use that currency, but also the world, how the world views that currency. And the U.S. had a stranglehold on, you know, democracy and how to run an economy around the world. All that ended with the 2020 presidential election. To me, the 2020 presidential election and my view on it is irrelevant, who I wanted to win. My audience knows who I wanted to win. But when you watch those hearings that are showing evidence of the blatant election fraud that took place in this election, you're watching the evidence with your own eyes. And all I can think is, this is how a superpower falls. This is where the people start to lose confidence in the democracy. This is when the people start to lose confidence in your government. This is how Zimbabwe goes into hyperinflation. This is how Venezuela goes into hyperinflation. The people start to lose faith in your currency. And then the world starts to lose faith in your currency. And that will lead to the destruction of the US dollar. Plus the, and right now, all they care about is your $3,000 transaction. Like the new laws just came out last minute over Christmas, supposed to have a 60-day comment period. They said 15-day comment period on this new regulation in crypto. And then they changed it to, you know what? We don't want your comments. We're going to do it anyway. The economy is being destroyed. The election is in question. And all these people care about is your $3,000 crypto transaction and how you're going to be reporting on that $3,000 transaction. The AML, the anti-money laundering laws, the Bank Secrecy Act, FATCA regulation, FBAR regulation, all this started with the Patriot Act. These regulations, plus the loss of faith in your government and democracy, is what's going to destroy the U.S. superpower and its currency. And they're going to print money because they think that's the solution. And that just makes the problem worse.
Yeah. Well, and I was trying to, in a new light, a new revelation, trying to wrap my mind around this concept of how the U.S. has been able to get away with this money printing and making bad decisions and endless debts and deficits and all these different, and it's almost like we've had a built up savings for a lot of good that has been happened over the years, you know, positioning in the world and, you know, all these things that have contributed to the position that the US has. And we've been depleting that credit, that savings, every time we print tons of money, every time we do something that just hurts the fundamental economy, to the point where we're running out of ammo until the point where these fundamentals do matter and we do lose that faith, or, you know, the world loses that faith.
And I'm with you. And it didn't matter. That's the thing. To me, none of it didn't matter as long as the people had confidence in the US dollar. Once the faith and confidence of your currency is lost, that's when everything collapses. So, and that's why it didn't matter how much they printed in 2008, because as long as people had confidence that the US is doing the right thing, it was all fine, because everyone still wanted those dollars. Everyone was hoarding dollars to put under their pillow. When the markets crashed in early March, when COVID hit and the economy started to shut down, the immediate reaction was, I don't know what's going to happen. The safest thing for me to do is to just put my money in the US dollars and in cash, whether it's if it's in a bank, if it's in a mattress, anywhere. I have to sell any speculative asset and put it in cash. But what happened in the last 3 months has been the opposite. It's been, oh my God, like, I don't want the US dollar. Look what's going on. I can't trust these politicians. I can't trust these people. So where do I put the US dollar? And this is why you're seeing stocks go up, gold go up, Bitcoin go up. Now it's a move into risky assets again, because, you know, Apple can always move. Amazon is a global company. They can always move. Your money is safer in Tesla stock than it is in US dollars right now. Your money is way safer in Bitcoin right now than it is in US dollars. And that's because it's a political event, not an economic one. But the politics are destroying the economy. And then the other side of not only did they shut everything down, they're printing more. But it's not the printing itself that causes the problem. If that money gets absorbed, for example, I know everyone is throwing this number around. The US has printed 20% of all its money this year in 2020. Even that is not a big deal, because guess what? By shutting down the economy, they destroyed like three times the trillions of dollars that they're printing. So even if they print 5 trillion, 10 trillion, they destroy 20 or 30 trillion worth of net worth of people. Real estate is down. Nobody wants to live in a major city anymore where the prices were high. Businesses got destroyed. What is it? 60% of businesses on Yelp are now permanently closed. All that is wealth. They destroyed way more wealth than they're printing. So the money printing is not going to cause any inflation. But what it's doing is it's making people rethink the US dollar. And no one wants to hold the US dollar right now because they're scared of the if anyone can just win the election because they control the voting machines. That's what people are scared of. And they're trying to get out of their US dollar exposure, and they'd rather hold risky assets as long as it's not government controlled.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of what I want to ask you about, you know, and especially as it pertains to Bitcoin. And I'll throw this at you from an angle, maybe you can approach it and by addressing this. We've really seen Bitcoin to a degree move with the stock market. Now, obviously, if you are honest with yourself, we've seen Bitcoin really outpace the market, the best performing asset. You know, it's just an incredible what we've seen since inception. But to the degree that it's had its ups and downs with the market, maybe address it from that perspective. And does that at all come into play with kind of your analysis for it going forward?
Yeah, a lot of people may not believe, but Bitcoin's been around, what, we're celebrating its 11th or 12th birthday coming up in January. And it's been perfectly in line with the stock market over the last 10 to 11 years. And that's because they're both private assets. There are two types of assets in the world. There's private and there's public. And currencies are public. They're, the government controls the currency. But the government doesn't control a stock company. I mean, maybe in China they do a little bit, but that's why people don't really trust the Chinese stock companies. But the US stock market is the most independent stock market. It has some of the most freedoms for companies, and they do somewhat follow the rule of law. And Bitcoin falls in the same category as a private asset, not a public asset. So it makes sense that Bitcoin and the stock market are acting similarly and are overall correlated. And when there is a panic and people are scared of private assets, they'll fall together. That's what happened earlier in 2020. And now when people are more scared of public assets, they will move that currency into something more private that they feel more confidence in, whether it's stocks or Bitcoin. Now, I've also seen correlations on a daily basis, like in on a day where the stock market is up, Bitcoin is usually up. Stock market is down, Bitcoin is usually down. Now, they do have their own individual fluctuations, but and the amplitude of them is a little bit different. Bitcoin did go through a two-year bear market from the top in late 2017 up until, this one's a little question. I think the bear market in Bitcoin bottomed this March. I was skeptical of the big moves in 2019. But even when Bitcoin was going down in a multi-year bear market, it was still somewhat correlated with the market. It just wouldn't go up as fast when the market goes up, and it would go down faster when the stock markets went down. Now Bitcoin is in a cyclical bull market. So whenever the stock markets rise, Bitcoin would rise a lot faster. And when the stock market's falling, Bitcoin would fall a little bit. So they are still correlated at the big level and at a small level, but in that intermediate level, that, you know, 6 month to 2 year time cycle, the amplification of them is very, very different. Mm.
Yes. Yeah, that's very, I think, important, because a lot of people, they just read the headlines and they see what's going on and they don't take it the full picture. And then even someone like Peter Schiff, who's always just berating Bitcoin constantly, he's going to be, you know, talking about how Bitcoin crashed from 50,000 to 35,000 and saying, I told you so, you know? And I just, some people just have no way of managing their expectations when it comes to this. And I guess I want to get your thoughts on, you know, how we've moved, how you've evolved, let's say, with what's happened in the markets, what's happened in Bitcoin, and kind of where that leaves us now. I mean, Bitcoin's at all-time highs. And I guess for me, it doesn't feel like, you know, the end of 2017 hype. It doesn't, the markets, the news around it, it's a little more of a relaxed, calm environment.
Yeah, it really is. The news is, maybe it's the news cycle as well. You know, in 2017, crypto was the talk of the town. There was nothing else going on. But today, people are so concerned about their financial life with the shutdowns, the election, just so much going on. People are realizing that you can't decipher true information on the internet anymore. We always knew that, there was a lot of fake news out there, but now it's like everything is fake news. Now it's almost impossible to find real information. And the best way to almost find real information is to listen to people you believe are independent thinkers about all the information around them. And you can kind of tell which people are more independent thinkers versus others.
Yeah.
It's and it's a huge challenge in order to decipher that. So I think the global macro picture is just so tense right now that Bitcoin is flying under the radar, but the institutional companies, not the financial institutions per se, but companies with a lot of cash that they don't know what to do with are starting to enter the space. I mean, the Michael Saylor, the CEO of MicroStrategy, is the most vocal one. We also have Jack Dorsey from Square. These guys have started to put their company's cash, they got approval and they're putting it into Bitcoin, and more companies are going to do the same. This just takes time. You got to get approval from your board, then you have to figure out how to acquire the Bitcoin. You got to figure out how to store the Bitcoin and protect the Bitcoin. All of these are challenges, and I think every company, every major company, has to consider this challenge. The other thing that's a little bit concerning is this push, this regulation that FinCEN and Steven Mnuchin just pushed out. Basically, the government is taking Bitcoin very, very seriously, but in the wrong way. They're taking it seriously in a way that would lead to the destruction of their own currency. If a country was to embrace Bitcoin, and this can't happen. For example, many countries around the world embrace the US dollar instead of their own currencies. Even Hong Kong, Hong Kong currency is pegged to the US dollar. Panamanian currency is pegged to the US dollar. I believe Costa Rica is as well, but I'm not sure. I think Panama even uses dollars. So it's not new for a country to decide to use the currency of another country that they consider is more stable. One of these days, a country can really take a leap forward. And right now, Bitcoin is still kind of volatile, but in another few years, maybe 5 years, when one Bitcoin is consistently over $100,000 a Bitcoin, the price of low-level goods and services are not going to fluctuate very much. And if a country, let's say like India, wanted to become the next world superpower, take over from the US, they actually could. All they have to do is embrace Bitcoin and don't enforce any money laundering laws. Don't enforce any bank secrecy laws. Just forget their own Indian rupees. If the government wanted to be the next superpower, embrace and let their people use Bitcoin as a currency. It will make their people incredibly wealthy. It will force every single smart entrepreneur to move to India and build the next company. This is totally doable. Of course, no country wants to do it. There's no way in hell US is going to do it. They are on a mission to destroy themselves as the world superpower. But another big country with a large young population can take the lead, and that could be the next country for freedom, because it does start with maybe it doesn't start with financial freedom. It would start with, freedom of speech and freedom of religion. And you do need, like, the US amendments are actually great. I like the gun rights. I like the Second Amendment as well. But the Fourth and Fifth Amendment are incredibly important. It's your ability not to incriminate yourself and to prevent government from simply arresting you because they want to. The US has been shredding these amendments, but there is definitely room. And this is what the U.S. doesn't understand. And that is starting to scare me. If you are a U.S. citizen that uses Bitcoin, you have to be very, very careful. They are going to be coming after you. And one of the reasons is because the country's economic system is crashing and they're falling. And the only thing they can do is start confiscating as much money as they can. And the beauty of Bitcoin is it's the first unconfiscatable asset the world has ever seen. You can store it in your brain and you can hold on to it. For people like me, it's too late. I'm a public person. But if you were not a public person and no one knows you have Bitcoin, you can keep it that way forever. No one has to know. And that's the beauty of it. This unconfiscatability of Bitcoin, I believe, is its most important aspect. That's how everything begins. If it's unconfiscatable, then you can use it as a censorship-resistant value transfer. And the fact that it is finite at 21 million Bitcoin will allow it to continue to appreciate in value as long as people value its core properties of unconfiscatability and censorship-resistant value transfer. That's what's important. Everything else will improve as technology improves and more people use it.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of like a martyr in that perspective for the publication of Bitcoin, the promotion of it, but also being public has its consequences too.
So, oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Tone, it's an interesting dynamic. I'll throw this question at you. How do you know when to sell Bitcoin? You kind of address kind of long-term, as long as people value its properties, it's got value and you want to have it. But is there any practical guidelines that you live by? I mean, if Bitcoin goes to a certain number, will that kind of give you a reason to want to sell and maybe put it in something that may not crash by, you know, 70% after it has this big moon moment?
That's an excellent question. And this is where a person has to really understand why they're holding Bitcoin. When people ask me about Bitcoin and if they should buy it, I tell them the following. Please understand what Bitcoin is. If you're not a professional trader, I actually don't even know what a professional trader is. If you're not a full-time trader, if you don't have trading expertise, you need to understand why you're buying Bitcoin. And you need to have a long-term time horizon. Because if you're buying Bitcoin for the sole purpose of getting rich, you're going to be very, very disappointed. Either you're going to buy high and get pissed when it doesn't make you rich, or you're going to buy it at a good time. It'll make you a little bit rich and you're going to sell it all and you're going to watch it keep going up and up and up. And then you'll be once again disappointed. So I always tell people you should have your HODL position, which is your savings. And then you can have your, you know, your play trading position. My advice is try not to trade with more than 10% of the Bitcoin that you hold. Now, when it comes to trading, I'm a big fan of technical analysis. As a, you know, an at-home trader, as a single person shop, or, you know, a small shop of like four or five friends, you don't have the ability to do pure fundamental analysis. Fundamental analysis in Bitcoin has been done. It's been done by guys like me 5-6 years ago. Bitcoin is the only investable asset in the crypto space. Everything else is fun to trade. It's like comparing Tesla stock to penny stocks. One is investable and one is only for trading. No one invests long-term into a stock that's worth 3 cents. Okay. So that's how I see all the other crypto assets. They're just there for trading. If you want to trade them, trade them. I don't trade them. I never traded penny stocks before Bitcoin existed, back when I was trading. And I stuck to the S&P 500, the NASDAQ 100, you know, gold, silver, commodities, stuff like that. If you have a HODL position, you're eventually going to sell. You sell when you feel like you need to use the money for something else. I mean, you could only drive a 15-year-old car for so long. If the Bitcoin has made you wealthy, you know, and you need that new car, you know, go and buy a car. You know, if it's worth it to you, go and buy a car. If your wife wants a new kitchen, you know, you may have to sell some Bitcoin and get a new kitchen. As long as you're happy with that purchase. no matter what Bitcoin price does after that. Timing the market is a little bit challenging. Yes, when it goes out of control, you're going to sell. But what happened in 2017, I felt that when Bitcoin hit $7,500 after going up 1,000% from early in the year, I thought that was a top. I thought that was enough. I called the top at $7,500. Now, I then said, you know what? It's going back up. I mean, we pulled back. We hit 7.5. We pulled back to about 5.5. But then we started rising again. Once we broke 8,000, I said, well, you know, I'm bullish again, but now it's exponential. I have no idea where it's going to end. People occasionally make fun of me for calling the top at 7,500, but I was only off by 3 weeks. You know, that 3 weeks led the price of Bitcoin to be 20K, but people sometimes get over, they overlook the time aspect to trading. All they care about is price. At what price do I buy? At what price do I sell? But a few people think of about price at a certain time. It was time for Bitcoin to end its bull market. The time was running out. And while I was off on price by a little bit, I certainly nailed the time aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with the bear market. Based on time, I didn't feel that it was over in 1 year. And I kept saying, no, don't go all too bullish. When Bitcoin went up in 2019 from 3,000 to 14,000, it really bothered me. It made no sense that the bull market has begun because time did not play out properly. Mm-hmm. But when Bitcoin crashed this year back to 4,000 with COVID, then time was enough. We spent over 2 years in a bear market. And I became a big bull right off of the COVID crash because now my price and time have somewhat lined up. Now, I did expect Bitcoin to even go a little bit lower, but time had run out. So based on time, I became a bull earlier this year. Based on price, I did expect us to go sub 3K, even though we came close, but we did not. So it's always price and time. So what about now? Right now, I believe we had hit a short-term top. So I actually sold. I got out a few weeks ago. All my metrics were pointing to a top. But I then got back in last week just before we were breaking 20K. So I got out around 18, 19, thinking we're going to go back to 14. And as a trader, if you don't reevaluate the market and make the right decision every minute of every day, or just every day, I reevaluated the market. I got out around 19 and I got back in because I wasn't able to buy at 14. So I got back in at 19.5. And I ran this whole thing up over the last week. And right now I'm a little cautious. I took 25% off the table last week and I'm still sitting on my 75% trading position. We're in a cyclical bull market, so I'm not touching my HODL position. I'm just talking my trading position. I trade that actually in my retirement account for tax advantages. And right now I'm starting to lean bullish once again. If we can close a day above 24,000, I will then be bullish into year end and into early next year. But we have not had a 30% correction since the lows of March, and it is coming. I would like to see it from 30,000 back down to 20,000. I think that would be great. And by 30, I mean 28 or the vicinity of 30. And right now I am starting to lean that way, that we have a little more upswing to go, but this 30% correction is coming. So be real careful. However, my expectation for 2021 and 2022 is huge, and mostly because of the political, the disrespect for U.S. politics going forward based on what happened in the 2020 election. That is now my biggest catalyst, the beginning of the loss of faith of people in the U.S. Democratic Republic, basically, and what that can do to their economy and especially their currency and the brain drain that's coming. Some of the smartest people are about to start leaving the United States based on what happened in this 2020 election.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more, especially on some of those things. And your analysis on the crypto space is invaluable to me. And so it's interesting. You know, we talked about when do you sell, but of course that's such a nuanced question. You know, did that person, did you, did I put a small position and then are watching it be a much larger position, but still, you know, as far as skin in the game goes, it wasn't your 40 years of retirement. It might be a very big number, but you know, you might be riding very large gains from years ago, or even just a few months ago at this point. But it's such a difficult thing because for some people, maybe they only put in a few percentage points of their portfolio. So yeah, now it makes up a large position, but you know, there's not a ton of skin in the game and you know, you're already balanced. They're already in the stock market. They have their real estate, they have cash. It's like, what else are you going to do with your money? Whereas somebody else might have 100% of everything they have in crypto where, you know, they do want to solidify some of the other areas of their life and, you know, make sure that they got some footing and not being something that might go up and down. And I guess for me, that's the nuance that I feel those questions that people have. And I think most people are there that they're not putting everything they have into cryptocurrency. I think that's the mainstream person that might be interested in Bitcoin. If I was to make a guess as to who is out there.
Yeah. So the way I simplify that is I'd like to separate Bitcoin from the rest of cryptos.
Sure.
I don't advise anyone to invest in other cryptos. You can trade them for fun if you're a trader.
Right.
They're not investment vehicles. And I'm not mad at myself for missing the Ethereum train. And I knew about Ethereum when it was launching. And I said, this is ridiculous. I'm not interested in this. Probably could have been a billionaire. But I didn't find it fundamentally sound, and I still don't. So those that are interested in Bitcoin, if you understand it fundamentally, I mean, Tesla did 3 times better than Bitcoin this year. Tesla outgained Bitcoin by 3x. If you understand the fundamentals of Tesla really, really well, and you went all in on Tesla, you did a lot better than a guy who understands Bitcoin fundamentals really well. Now, going all in on anything is very, very dangerous. But on the other hand, we can look at someone like Elon Musk. I'm sure he's all in on Tesla. I think 80% of his net worth, at least 80 to 90% of his net worth is tied into Tesla because he really, really believes in it. Now, unlike Tesla, Bitcoin is not a company. Bitcoin is this decentralized computer network. Now, I have confidence in Bitcoin the same way Elon Musk has confidence in Tesla. So for me, having an abnormal percentage in Bitcoin is perfectly fine because that represents my level of confidence in Bitcoin. And for anyone else, their investment in Bitcoin should match their confidence level in Bitcoin. And you have to be willing to face the consequences of that decision if it doesn't work out. And for the majority of people, they're not going to have my kind of confidence in Bitcoin. So if your confidence is 5% of your portfolio, 10% of your portfolio, that's what it should be. Now, as Bitcoin grows in price and it becomes a bigger chunk of your portfolio, you need to reevaluate why that happened. And the more you start learning about Bitcoin, it's possible that your confidence will grow. And you might realize that you are actually underweight in your Bitcoin position, even though it has grown from 5% to 15% of your portfolio. When you start understanding why that happened, you can say, oh my God, why am I only 15% in? It could also be the opposite. You could say, you know what? I'm reading about it. I'm still a little bit nervous. Maybe I should scale back to 5%. Then that's what you should do. What I teach is people need to be responsible for their own decisions, whether they're investing decisions, whether they're trading decisions, and you shouldn't depend on anyone else. If you're going to depend on anyone else, you find a reputable investor, whether it's a hedge fund, if you're high net worth, whether it's a money manager, not that much of a fan of. But if you are not, if you don't want to take responsibility for your own decisions, then you need to let a regulated, credible person manage your money and let them do it. Those are the only two options. But don't listen to me as to what I do with my portfolio. That's another thing I try to teach people. Everyone wants to know what you hold and what I do. And I tell people, don't worry about my money. Don't worry about my investments. Worry about your investments. You can listen to what I'm holding, but if you don't, but you're never going to understand why I'm holding it until you research the things that I'm holding and make those decisions on your own.
Yeah, that's good words there. And because everyone wants to know the answer to these questions. Man, what a great conversation. I want to touch briefly on the stock market. We've seen stock mania this year since March. I mean, tons of new YouTubers starting channels talking about Tesla and all these EV companies. And just, my goodness, it's bigger than what we saw in 2017 with the crypto boom, with all these channels that were popping up, just anyone talking about Bitcoin or cryptocurrency and having thousands of people watch their video. I mean, we're seeing that on the stock market right now, and it really does feel like a mania. But I'm very open and curious to what your thoughts are on this and what seems like a mania.
Well, sure. Well, as I mentioned earlier, the stock market is rising because people feel safer by having their dollars in the stock market than as dollars, or especially in government bonds or any other investments that are tied directly to government. And as far as stocks go, stocks that rely on the internet are doing well. I mean, Amazon is crushing it. Zoom was one of the best performing assets. Technically, the best performing asset was a stock with the ticker ZOOM, which has been around for over a decade, because people, mostly Robinhood traders, can't tell the difference between the real Zoom stock ZM and a ZOOM. And that's kind of the culture. Everyone's become a trader because everyone is stuck at home. And what are you going to do? You can only play video games for so long. So everyone is starting to become a trader. And Robinhood has made it very easy, maybe a little too easy, for people to think that trading is a game, and it's really not a game. It could get really, really serious. But yeah, you're watching everyone becoming a trader, which is also what happened in 2000. I know we're running low on time, but my introduction to the market, I wasn't a finance major when I was in undergrad. I was a geology major, actually, so I was doing a lot of field work and stuff. But in my dorm, one of my friends was a finance major, and I remember him borrowing $1,000 from his brother, and this is in the late 90s, he got an E-Trade account, and he's like trading penny stocks, and of course he lost $1,000, but that helped drive the dot-com bubble, because all of a sudden anyone can be a trader. And all this money started pouring in, because prior to that, he would have never been able to trade as a 19, 20-year-old. But with E-Trade, it was so easy. And now that it's a cell phone culture, an app like Robinhood is making everybody a trader. And that is, of course, going to push more money into the stock market in general, and it can pump it until, eventually it drops. But this time around, the market isn't going up because of inflation. The market is going up because that's where people feel their money is safer. And we'll see where that ends. I was always going against the gloom and doomers. COVID really threw a wrench into my stock market bullishness. I've been a stock market bull for over 5 years, probably longer than that, 5-6 years. I was a little too skeptical coming out of the bear market of 2008. I was reading too many gloom and doomers and how hyperinflation is going to happen and how everything is going to get destroyed. And then eventually I realized that a lot of it is just nonsense and it's just used to sell newsletters. And I became a bull around 2013, like 2013 going into 2014. And I've been saying that market is going to go to S&P is going to go to 4,000, 5,000, the Dow is going to go to 75,000. I always thought that, even without hyperinflation. And I still don't, now I'm starting to see hyperinflation because of the politics that happened. If Trump was to be president for the next 4 years, I think the stock market would have done incredibly well with the low taxes and the economy booming. He had the lowest unemployment percentage prior to COVID hitting, and that would have been bullish for the stock market. And now we're still bullish the stock market because now everyone is scared of putting their money anywhere else because of their loss of confidence in the US political structure, which leads to a loss of confidence in the US economic structure, which leads to a loss of confidence in the US dollar as a currency. And this benefits Bitcoin the most, but also benefits companies that don't rely on a single nation or a jurisdiction like an Amazon that can expand globally. So I am generally bullish the stock market, but fluctuations will come.
Yeah. Yeah, and the only thing I could say to add to that is we've seen a decimation of a lot of these middle class small businesses, which have funneled money from those shops into Amazon, into Google, Facebook. I mean, there's just this, you know, Target's done well, Walmart's done well, the big box stores, but, you know, like you said, 25-30% of Yelp is gone. So,
yeah, it's insane. COVID rules don't apply to Walmart. You can walk in there. People are telling you can walk around there with a mask, without a mask. No one's going to say anything, you know, but God forbid you walk down the street without a mask. It's really, really frustrating. I already got my list of countries for next year that don't have COVID restrictions. And that's who's getting my tourist money. That's where I'm going. The least restrictive your country is, the more I want to go there and spend. I'll be in California for half a day in a few days. There is one business that's completely defying Governor Newsom mask restrictions. Their Yelp rating is going through the floor. Everyone is going on Yelp, giving them a one star because their employees or customers are not required to wear a mask. And I'm really praying that this business is not like demolished by the time I get there tomorrow, so I can go and support that business.
Good for you, Tone. Well, if you have anything, Tone, that you'd like to mention, any conferences or meetups or anything that you might be doing in this time, please share that information with people. And of course, thank you so much for coming on the show and sacrificing your time for me today.
Thanks, Kenneth. No, it's been a pleasure. And no, almost all my conferences have to be canceled this year. I organized 3 conferences around the world. I got the last one in before COVID, the Unconfiscatable Conference that takes place in Las Vegas. We got that done at the end of February, just before COVID hit. And we might be the first conference back. So I have it scheduled for end of April back in Vegas. We're going to make the decision in about a month when we know exactly who is sitting behind that presidential desk. And we know there's no civil war and blood in the streets after we figure out who is sitting in the Oval Office. Once all that clears over, we will put that conference on sale, hopefully. There's only one thing I need before that conference goes on sale. I'm not going to be the mask police. As long as I can have that conference and treat people like adults. You want to wear a mask, wear a mask. You don't want to wear a mask, don't wear a mask. And if you don't like it that people may not wear a mask, then stay home, then don't come to the conference. That's our view on it. I'm going to try to bring that back to Vegas, Unconfiscatable. The other conferences, the Financial Summit, it's thefinancialsummit.com, had to be canceled this year. That one's in Bali. Hopefully we'll be back at the end of the year. And Understanding Bitcoin Conference in Europe, understandingbtc.com. Hopefully we can bring that back in September as well, back to Europe. Other than that, check out Tone Vase on Twitter, YouTube, and the website, tonevase.com.
Thanks, Tone, for coming on the show with me today.